Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Night's Watch, the officially unofficial podcast for HBO's Game of Thrones. I'm your host, Aaron.
Hodor.
Hodor, Hodor.
And I'm Mad Brew.
It's Hodor's kind of a tongue twister. Try to say that three times fast. Hodor, Hodor, Hodor.
Hodor.
It goes into Hodor.
Hodor.
One does not Hodor. Simply walk into Hodor.
Hodor. Hodor.
Tonight we're going to be considering episode 4 of season 1, Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things, directed by Brian Kirk, who also did episode 3, and written by Brian Cogman, which we'll talk about here in a minute.
Brian Kirk's done all the episodes up until now, right?
Has he? I haven't been paying attention.
I think so, because I don't think I've had to copy him out of my notes. I just copy my Google Notes over.
We put in maximum effort in our note taking here at Ball Move. We're known for our studiousness. And all that crap. So, Brian Cogman, what do you know about him?
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I actually...
He has no Wikipedia page, and his IMDb page is sparse.
Yeah, I noticed that, and I did a little searching on Wikipedia, and Wikipedia informed me that Cogman...
What? I just said that there's no information on Wikipedia.
Yeah, in the actual article for the episode.
Wow.
He was hired on for the Game of Thrones pilot as a writing assistant and was contracted for the full series
what
as a script
a
editor and unofficial keeper of the mythos for the show. Because I guess he's like the biggest fan. So he's like, he would keep track of all the character Bibles and their motivations and make sure if writers stepped aside.
Consistency.
He kept the consistency. So I still haven't figured out how to pronounce
Benioff?
This. Benioff and Weiss. You asked them to do it just a treatment for the episode 4 since they haven't had that slated out yet. He took a stab at it, and they end up using it just as a shooting script.
Hey, so, how about being the biggest fan? That'd be awesome.
That'd be cool.
Be like, look at that. I got a fucking writing credit.
Right. And it's his first like sole writing credit, too. He's had some staff writing credits and some assistant
So that's probably
credits.
He's been story keepers for other shows then.
Yeah,
or something.
It looked like he wrote
What's
some,
a staff writer?
Like, okay, so like Saturday Night Live, the people that write the scripts... Or the skits.
Okay.
They're a staff writer.
I see.
They don't.
So they write itty bitty pieces.
Yeah, and it's like variety of different things. Like Dave Letterman has a bunch of staff writers, so they don't get much credit, which explains why there's a dearth of information.
And this Cripples, Bastards, and Broken Things originally aired on May 8th, 2011. So,
indeed.
And this also continues the trend of gaining more viewership throughout the series. So this has a little bit more viewers than the last episode.
Like to see that. You got any other background info before we dive right into the recap?
Nope, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention that our awesome intro theme was is courtesy of Alert, and we'll have him linked in our show notes on the website.
Yep, you can find him at soundcloud.com/alerttm, all one word. We start off in Winterfell, as we often do, and this time, notice something weird about this scene. Did you notice it right away?
Bran's standing.
Bran's up and shooting arrows and walking.
Yeah.
And
so that immediately accused me, and this is either a flashback or a dream.
And we pretty much got confirmation of the latter, because we don't know about all the weird fauna of Westeros.
We know there's dire wolves.
But maybe there's three-eyed crows.
And there's dragons.
But if we were confused, we saw him wake up. So that pretty much, I think,
right. And his caretaker said, the little lord was dreaming as soon right when that switches.
So what'd you make of that the first time you saw it?
Well, obviously, there's a crow with three eyes. The third eye in the center of the forehead is, as far as literature and fiction goes, that's significant of psychic powers. So,
did you think anything of the crow kind of beckoning him into the family crypt? That there was any significance to that?
There may be significance, but I have no clue what that would be.
So as the little lord, as you said, wakes up, we see two things. Number one, Greyjoy walks in, the ward of, slash hostage of the Starks, and, Summer growls at him. That's kind of our first hint that...
That something's not right with this dude?
The Theon, is that how you pronounce it?
Theon? I think it's Theon.
Theon Greyjoy might not be all is cracked up to be. Not all the Stark goodness is.
Well, he comes out, like being an ass with this broken kid. He's like, "Well, this is what Rob said, and Rob told me, and I'm telling you, or I do what Rob says, and you do what I say." And I'm
also
like,
this hag in the corner that I'm speaking of, right in front of her.
Yeah,
not pretty cool.
No.
Also, we got the first appearance of Hodor.
Yeah, Hodor. who's a big brute.
His dialogue is brilliant. I'm telling you what, Cogman, he is a genius with this man's dialogue.
I know.
I would never have thought to.
Only says one word ever. Hodor.
And if you got to repeat a word forever, Hodor. Not a bad one.
And he doesn't have to say it like really fast. He just says it once.
Right.
And that's not even his name, is it?
That's according to the books. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just what. That's everyone. That's
the
calls
only word
him.
He says.
Right. Right. And he's kind of a mystery, his parentage. Like, some people say he's old Nan's kid. But how in the world would a 90-year-old woman have middle age? You know, that doesn't sound right.
Maybe that's why he's all fucked up.
Maybe. He got one of those old moldy eggs. Got a 50-year-old egg. That never goes good.
Whatever sperm dying to float up that canal. Yeah.
Had to crawl through the dust to get up there. Anyway, so... Next scene, we see Bran is being brought to the Great Hall, and wouldn't you know it, Tyrion fulfills his promise right. that he made to go back and visit Bran.
But he's not welcomed.
No, he's not.
Rob's very cold with this guy. And Tyrion makes a point, you know, saying, hey, you know, maybe you should learn, you know.
A lord's courtesy.
Right.
Especially when you're dealing with one of the most powerful houses in Westeros.
Yeah, just because he's a dwarf, he's still a Lannister.
Right, so. And do you think that he really doesn't know that they suspect something at this point?
Are you talking about Tyrion?
Yeah, does he suspect that the Starks know something is amiss?
Well, in this particular scene, I don't have an opinion on that. Mm-hmm. It could go either way. Because I've been wondering, you know, was Tyrion part of this little plan that they hatched?
Right.
But once we get later into this episode, there is something that causes me to pause and think that maybe he is totally, like... He doesn't know all the details.
True. I think I know what you're talking about. So he goes up there and he's like, you know, fuck you, Rob. I'm not really here to see you anyway. I'm here to talk to Bran. Ask him if he likes to ride. Bran informs him that he does and he's not a cripple. And
oh, yeah. I'm not a cripple. Well, then I'm not a dwarf.
My father will rejoice to hear it. So he has sketched up the mind of Tyrion. He's drafted up a little engineered piece of a
harness.
That will allow Bran to ride if he has the right horse and if their horses and riders the right training. And this obviously makes Bran kind of spark up.
Right. So he's like, because obviously the only way you can use a longbow is if you're standing up.
Right. Or if you're on horseback. Well, they probably couldn't use a longbow. I don't think they used longbow on horseback, did they?
Yeah, they probably use short bows on horseback, but still.
Still, you can kill a man and hunt.
Yeah. After that, Rob kind of goes back and says, well, you have the hospitality of the Starks or Winterfell or whatever, and is like, yeah, whatever. There's a whorehouse right outside of town, right outside the gates. I'll get me room there and make my, you know, everyone can sleep better then.
And I wouldn't feel bad if I was Rob because nine times out of ten, Tyrion's going to do that anyway. Even if Rob did all the courtesies of a lord, he's still going to stay in a whorehouse.
Right. do you think, at that point, do you think Rob was like, I don't think he did, but do you think he had any remorse over his lack of courtesy before?
I think he had remorse solely over the lack of courtesy, but I still think he's deeply suspicious of all things Lannister.
Yeah.
But and also, he's a young kid. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's younger than 16 in the books.
Right, which also causes Tyrion to ask, you know, where's Lady Stark? She's not here, is she?
Right. And he's definitely kind of investigating that throughout the his stay at Winterfell.
And then on his way out, he actually, there's some skullduggery that goes on between him and Theon where it's kind of like, it's almost like he's playing sides against sides. Theon is basically saying, well, you know, I'm treated fairly well here. And he's like, oh, are you?
Right.
So,
what would your father...
Yeah,
what would you raping, pillaging pirate king say about this? And that's the thing. I didn't think much of this the first time I saw it, but now that I read a few of the books, and
they don't really go into detail about why he's a ward.
Right.
Even though he does give some exposition later,
mm-hmm.
It's still very unclear about, you know, well, what the fuck happened.
Right.
So.
I might flag some to talk about some spoilers afterwards. We're back at the wall. And introduce a lot of my favorite characters get introduced into this. We got Hodor, and now we got Samwell Tarly, who is the Queen Piggy. Or Lady Piggy. Is that what they end up calling him? Fat kid.
Yeah, he's a fat kid. He's a fat coward.
So
self-professed coward.
Right? And the master of arms there at the wall does not take kindly to this coward, and he basically instructs the boys to beat on him until he gets back up and fight, until John puts an end to it.
Right. And then, of course, Alistair, which is the trainer, kind of storms away. And then, like, John has a conversation with Sam, even though he's already professed himself to be a coward. And then the allies John's already made is pissed off because he's like, well, now everybody's going to think we're a coward.
Right.
You know, we're associating with a coward, and everybody thinks we're going to be a coward. So, obviously, reputations matter a lot here.
Right.
At the wall where it's, you get what you earn, and what you earn is based on your reputation.
We'll see if this negatively affects John later on. we go from the wall to across the narrow sea to the city of
Dothraki,
the Vale's Dothrak, which Viserys sums up as a pile of mud and shit and twigs.
Yeah, and he's throwing a hissy fit about how this is his army. This right. is my army. This right. is my army. I gave you away so I could get an army.
So I think I decisively won our argument from last week about whether he gets it now.
No, I think he gets that there's a power. My whole point before was that he understands that there's been a change in power. He's still throwing a hissy fit about it.
He understands that his sister is, for whatever reason, has the temerity to stand up to him, but he doesn't understand that the power shifted as... It negatively impacted his standing in the world. We also get a little backstory. First of all, we see that Daenerys is standing up to...
Yeah, she's still showing some backbone.
And she has now identified... She is no longer the lost girl from Westeros that wants to get back to, you know, the King's Landing. This is her people. And I kind of get the idea, you know, even though later on she talks about wanting to go home, I think she's starting to feel like this is more of her home than she's ever felt anywhere else.
Right. Well... This is the first time she's ever been in a position of power.
Right.
Or I should say in a position where she was underneath her brother's thumb.
True.
And and I think what you're saying with because again, some cleverly veiled exposition here, why the Dothraki have never crossed the Narrow Sea. And that's because they don't trust any water that their horses can't drink.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that tells us that the Narrow Sea is an actual sea and salt water.
Yep. Which they consider as poison. We also get a little bit of backstory again on
Jorah
Mormont, the fact that
Mormont,
god dang it, the fact that Ned Stark wants his head and drove him from his land.
Yeah, Ned Stark's the one who actually exiled him for being a slaver.
Yep, well, because the Mormonts are his bannermen, so he is actually other than an appeal right to the king.
Right.
He's the buck stops with him. So, and the Daenerys asks him why he got into this situation, why he decided to sell slaves, and as I explained in the spoiler section of last week, it's because, more or less, he didn't have any money and an expensive wife.
Right, who is now somewhere else with another man.
So, good job, buddy.
Yeah, seems all for naught.
Next, we got a scene, a little titillation here, between, I think her name is Doria?
Yeah, it's whoever coached Daenerys on sex.
Right. So we got him and or she's trying this time to make Viserys happy. And she's talking about, trying to flatter him with his dragon's blood and asking him about the different dragons she saw.
Yeah, it starts talking about the dragon skulls, which we also see later on in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes me wonder if there's some more importance to dragon skulls. So dragon eggs, as we saw in the first couple episodes, and then now we have dragon skulls. And I got to tell you, dragons just are not erotic for me.
You don't think they're sexy?
No, the scene was not titillating for me at all. Maybe just because, Viserys is a whiny jackass, but...
I thought it was interesting that there's a lot of foreshadowing when he asks her, you're just a common whore, what have you seen? And she lists off some things that are from later on in the series where... She says, I've seen a man from a shy with a dragon glass dagger. I've seen a man who can change his face the way a man can change his clothes. And I've seen a pirate wear his weight in gold, referring to the Greyjoy clan.
Is that the Greyjoys?
Yeah, so they have this philosophy where they're not allowed to wear anything as an ornament that they did not personally take from an enemy.
Wow.
So if you're wearing a bracelet or a necklace, and so if you see like a Mr. T looking pirate... that dude has been through a lot of battles because he's personally taken that from one thing from every man he's killed, basically.
That's some pretty cool shit.
Yeah. So there's some backstory on that, and that's basically all these things come in later in books 2, 3, and on in the series. So that's I don't think it's really a spoiler. It's just a foreshadowing of things to come. Did you notice Viserys had, like, a weird-ass scar running through one of his nipples?
Yeah.
What?
Was that a scar, or was that leftover wax from where she poured the wax on him?
Oh, maybe. I thought it looked like to me a scar. Like,
I couldn't tell.
This dude, I don't think has ever been through a battle, though. And I was like, what?
Fucking mad-ass father probably did some strange shit to him.
Possibly. Or as he was being speared away, maybe he got hurt as a little kid.
Yeah.
I noticed there was a note that I found on the internet that the dragon, when he's listing all the Targaryen dragons...
He has a big, long list of names.
He listed a lot of them from the actual series that are canonical names, like Balerion, Meraxes, and Vhagar. And then a couple were invented for the show. One, Vermithrax, was from the 1981 film Dragonslayer, who the author George R.R. Martin... ranked it as the 5th best fantasy film of all time.
Really?
And he also called Vermithrax the best dragon ever put on film and the coolest dragon name. So that was a kind of a nod to
that's
the
pretty
meta,
cool.
The
that's
meta
pretty
narrative.
Cool. I didn't hear Smaug in there.
That, yeah, there should have been. There definitely should have been there. Or Puff?
Pete?
Pete? Yeah, Pete. That would have been hilarious. Puff and Pete. That would get me horny. If I started talking about Puff and Pete.
Oh my goodness.
So we end up, Viserys kind of realizes that, this girl is there to kind of flatter, start to realize that, you know.
Well, she says, oh, that's sad. And then he's like, yeah, that is sad. He's, why are you making me sad? You know, right. It's like, that's kind of, you know, that's not what I bought you for. Especially, right. You know, like I didn't buy you so you could make Drogo happy.
Right.
So yeah, obviously. Yeah, he treats her like a piece of meat. I'm surprised he even allows her to talk to him.
Right.
He shouldn't be saying shit.
Right.
Your mouth should be full of something.
Well, I think that's where they're getting to at the end of the scene.
Mm.
I actually thought maybe that the actress that played, I forget what's her name, Doria or whatever, I thought she might have a no nudity clause in her contract because
her hair was the Little Mermaid
deal, but then it slipped at the end and let go of the goods. Which I believe is the only nipples we saw in this.
Yeah, there wasn't a...
I'm pretty sure I'm right. I tried to call that last week, and you said that there were titties, so I don't know. Let's go back to King's Landing.
Yeah, I think that's all the titillation we get, which wasn't much.
No blood, really, either. Some drawn swords, and that's it. We see who this... we see that Sansa's walking with her retainer, her lady-in-waiting, Septa Mordain, and she's fretting about... What if I only have girls, and what if Joffrey hates me because of that? And Septa thinks Sansa's being an idiot.
Oh, yeah. You know what strikes me as funny? The Septa doesn't like calling the Mad King the Mad King.
Right. She's very concerned.
Proper.
Well, again, she's concerned with everything prim and proper and courtly. So everything's a proper name and...
I gotcha.
His grace.
Also, I didn't realize this until now, but I guess Joffrey has a little brother.
Uh-huh.
Have we seen him?
I'm sure we've seen him, but he's been in the background.
Okay. Yeah, he's like 8 years old or something.
Right.
So.
But that's some minor foreshadowing right there. Then we go to, from that scene, to the small council, and there's a debate raging over the tournament, which, I think this is Ned's first kind of real compromise. He's like, fine, you know, whatever.
Right, because I guess... Crime is up, so a lot of people came into town and they're fucking shit up because they don't have something else to entertain them.
Right. And the fact it's going to make a lot. It's the same Super Bowl argument. You should build a Super Bowl here.
Oh, yeah. Well, it happens to fill all the coffers of the people on the council.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. Imagine that. That's just like real world politics.
Right.
He also lends some of his men to the guard.
Right.
Which... I think was a foolish move on his part.
Especially after the speech he gave to Arya last week about what a dangerous place they've gone into.
Yeah. And once again, Baelish proves that he's a smug asshole.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's all... Constantly. I hate when he fucking smiles.
Yeah, again, he does it too often. As a veteran of The Wire, I hated this guy from sight and initially and did not trust him at all. So, very well played character. Then we see he retires to Grandmeister Picel's office. And I noticed that this is the first, because now that I've read the books, I'm really looking for details. And I thought that this is the first time we really got to look at the Meister's chains, which kind of, I don't know if you know your Westeros history, but these the citadel that they go to that trains them, every single time that one of the trainees masters an art, they get a link in her chain.
Mm.
Like, for example, black iron is for ravenry. And, you know, gold is for accounting. And you've got all these different, and the bigger and more elaborate chains and the number of chains you wear, the higher rank you are as a Meister.
Oh.
And the Grandmeister is appointed by the Citadel to be basically the Meister for the king and the liaison between the Citadel and the King's Landing.
We haven't heard much or anything about the Citadel this whole series.
No, you hear a little bit more in, as Bran talks to the Meister at Winterfell, Luwin, I believe. But yeah, we don't find out a lot. And I don't think even in the books until book two that we get really into that particular part of the intrigue. So, I mean, shit, we got enough without learning about the politics of the religion and the seven gods and the, you know, High Septon and all that crap and the Meisters. But we see that the Ned's beginning his investigation into Jon Arryn's death. And he finds out that he was reading some pretty dry...
Yeah, the lineages and histories of the houses of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yep.
Yeah, that looked like a thick book that no one wants to read.
No, it's basically the phone book.
Yeah.
Or it's like reading Deuteronomy.
Yeah, so-and-so begat, so-and-so begat, so-and-so begat, so-and-so. And it's right. Like, except for this one has details. Oh, and this guy died of a wound to his stomach before his 16th year. And it's like, wow.
But what's interesting is it gives a physical description of each sire and also of the woman and the resulting child, which is going to play in
old world genetics.
Exactly. And he asked if, you know, the former hand had said anything before he died. And Picel informs him that he said that the seed is strong. He kept on saying that over and over before he died.
Right, which comes back next episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it comes back next episode. And Picel just kind of dismisses it because he's like, you know, the last words of dying men often are as important as the first words of a person. And I was like, they're just blathering. So
I thought that we also got the first real taste of intrigue here because when Ned brought up, was like, well, have you thought about him being poisoned?
The Meister's like, oh, well, no, but if you're thinking in that direction, maybe you should take a look at the spider, which is the eunuch.
Right, because that's a woman, a craven, and a eunuch's weapon.
Yeah.
So it's like, obviously we see these wheels within wheels moving. Then we get a little bit of break in the, again, the Westeros CSI stuff, and we see Arya practicing her balance on one foot.
Yeah, she's standing on her toes, because a water dancer can stand on their toes for hours.
I don't think that's true. But it's something Sirius obviously told her.
Right.
And next day he's got her chasing cats, which is hilarious.
Yeah, and Arya asks if she can someday be like the Lord of a Guard or some stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And Stark is, you know, Ned is pretty quick to say, well, you're going to be the wife of a powerful lord, or, you know, and
bury him a lot of children,
and your sons will be knights and lords and whatever. And she's like, yeah, that's not me. Mm-hmm. She's like, no, what, like, you're smoking crack,
right?
Like, obviously, why did you even bring this up? Because you're already giving me sword fighting lessons. What do you think was gonna, what did Ned think, where does Ned think she's gonna go from here?
Well, I think this is kind of like when he looks at her, he's kind of seeing her in a new light. Like, you know, that this is what's going to happen. You know, that this, yeah, you're right. This is not the girl that I brought into this world. She's not the marrying and follow the Lord and be, give children and be proper. That's Sansa. Yeah. This isn't Arya.
She's not a domestic.
Right. But it blows his mind because he's got, although it's interesting because Maggie Mormont is like a crazy warrior woman and one of his bannermen to the north. So you'd think he would be kind of a little hep to the idea that you'd had to have some.
Well, what's her reputation? I mean, does everybody like her in the north?
I don't know. I only know her from the game
Battles of Westeros. Or does everybody else think that she's a crazy biatch that should know her place?
I think
not that the opinions and traditions of Westeros reflect this
Well, she's rumored
the host's she's, outlook.
If this, I don't know if this answers the question, but all the men rumor that she's a bear fucker. I don't think anyone would say that to her face.
A bear fucker.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the rumor.
That's some crazy shit. So is she the receiver or the giver in the bear fucking?
You'd have to ask the bear that, man.
So, does she have a strap on? She strapped something on for that shit?
Well, you can't have a, you can't be a strong woman in Westeros, is that what you're saying, Michael? Without a penis?
No, but
or a reasonable facsimile thereof.
A strong woman wouldn't submit herself to a fucking bear.
Well, that's maybe that's what I'm saying. She's putting the bear to she's working that making him work that muzzle.
Fisting.
Okay.
Fisting a bear.
All right. All right. This is a this is not really a family cast. Not a family show.
Did we ever advertise it as a family cast?
No, it's gonna be explicit for sure.
Okay.
Even still, back at the wall. Actually we're on top of the wall. As a revenge probably, Sir Alistair has made Sam's John's new watch partner. And John quickly sizes him up and like, why are you here?
Right. And this is where we find out that Sam's backstory is pretty fucked up. I guess because he's a coward and the way he is, the fat boy, his father absolutely doesn't want him to have anything to do or doesn't want to have anything to do with him. They definitely doesn't want him to inherit his legacy.
Right.
So he told Sam that you either forsake everything and you go take the black, or we're going to be going on a hunting, a hunting trip, and you're going to fall and die.
And that's the actually option he'd prefer as his father.
Right, because he'd like nothing better.
Right.
Nothing would make him more happy. That's pretty harsh.
Yeah, and I think this is John's natural leadership, because as he hears this, you can see that he's going to make it his mission to make sure Sam makes it up here, because that's such an unfair... It's not like Sam, like, oh, I'm going to go off for adventure. It was do this or die, and as a coward...
Yeah, he's afraid of heights, too.
Oh, yeah, he's afraid of everything.
Because he doesn't
even
want to come close to the fire because he don't want to get near the edge.
And you see that he's doing that. Now, that's me. I've got a pretty severe fear of heights, too, so I'd stay a body's length away from
it would
any...
be the tunnel going through the bottom that would get me.
Really?
Claustrophobic. The tunnels would probably be all right, but if I'm like... It's really tight spaces, so caverns, having to spelunk through caverns...
See, I don't have a problem with that. I've actually camped in caves before, but I have to stay a full body length away from any long fall. Because if I fuck up and trip, I want to make sure that I'm not going to fall over.
Right.
Makes me shake this thing about it. Anyway, going back to King's Landing, and Littlefinger sidles up to Ned as he's walking around and says, hey.
He's helping him.
I hear you're
he's
reading,
helping him out.
I hear you're reading a boring book.
This guy has ears everywhere.
Right.
So I guess what the Meister was blabbing about this shit, because I don't see anybody else in there.
Well, but you never know. There could be someone, trimming bushes outside the window. There's little birds everywhere.
Or maybe there's like piped...
And I think it's
there's shit piped through there.
Littlefinger is basically sowing paranoia here,
because he points out all the spies
and
who they belong to.
Yeah, but the thing is, like all these yard workers and people reading books and stuff, it's natural to probably like if you were just some random dude in Washington D.C. and you saw Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton walk by, you'd probably like look and give him at least a glance. So, like, I think, I don't know that that's what this is. I'm just thinking it could be, or it could be just Peter ramping up his, like, look at this guy, and then this is over.
Yeah, I love how Baelish, because there's no benefit for Stark to telling this.
Right.
And this is Baelish fucking with Stark under the guise of helping him for Catelyn.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't like this guy.
But he gives him two solid leads. One... Hey, did you know that John Hugh of the Vale mysteriously got knighted right after John's death? And John Arryn, before he died, had a particular interest in an armorer down in King's Landing.
Yeah, and he says the one honest thing that ever comes out of his goddamn mouth.
Yeah, distrusting me is the wisest
thing, you've ever done, yeah.
Which turns out to be prophetic. So he also tells him that he should send his man-at-arms or his house guard, Jory, down to try to get Hugh's attention, but Hugh is a newly minted knight, and he's not going to talk to some common man.
Yeah, he's a prick.
Yeah. Most knights in King's Landing
name, sir. And he's like, oh, I'm not a knight. Well, I am. And then he marches off.
I guess it's very unusual for the men of the North to be knights.
Yeah, I know. It's like, why doesn't Stark knight some motherfuckers?
This, like, that's...
Or is that only the king's job?
I guess it's a north-south thing. It's the old religion versus the new. Mm. The new religion talks about seers and the vows of, you know, this and that. There are a few, but they don't often take that honor. They think it's stupid. So
yeah, it's not very... I mean,
plus it doesn't,
who gives it a title doesn't mean anything.
Exactly. Ned rides up to the armor, and we meet Gendry, who's going to be an important character later on for the first time. And Ned's trying to figure out why he'd had interest, but then he found out that his mother had blonde hair, and you can kind of see everything hit together, and he's like, ah, that's King Robert's bastard son. In the book, they describe him as looking exactly like Robert. I don't think this dude looked very much like...
Well, I don't know. We'd have to see him with, like, 200 more pounds. Or, actually, the dude's pretty fucking buff, so we'd have to see him lose some muscle mass and gain some fat.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Robert used to be...
Yeah, Robert used to be a powerhouse. Yeah, right. But he's not anymore.
Yeah.
Spends too much time drinking.
Speaking of that, we then go to Jory's been sent to give a message to the king, and blocking him is Jaime, who's standing guard over the king's busy day of whoring.
Right, because... And from the Kingslayer's dialogue here, we find out that Robert actually does this specifically when Jaime's standing watch, so Jaime can hear Robert fuck around on on Cersei.
His humiliation.
Right.
Which probably doesn't humiliate Jaime as much as he
does.
Yeah,
not since he's tapping it.
Right.
Which is weird.
I got to say that, again, as a geek that's reading this as an eye towards book stuff, I thought the Kingsguard armor is really fucking cool. It's described in the book as, like, white enameled steel. And I like the kind of ivory, and it's got the, you know, the king's symbol, and it just looks the business, man.
I tell you.
For ceremonial armor, it's top notch.
Well, we don't get to the cool ass armor until next episode.
Oh, okay. viewpoint here is Jory mentions Theon Greyjoy.
Right.
Says he's a good lad, and Jaime says
no, he's not. and again, I think we're seeing, because, you know, I think the previous scene where he goes to talk to Hugh, and because he's not a knight, he gets no play. I think it's almost like because he's not a knight here, he gets less respect than what he should.
Mm.
So it's like, if you're not a knight and you're a King's Landing trying to do business.
But the difference between the John Hugh and Jaime is actually a fighting man. And Jory drops the fact that they fought together in a battle, and that instantly kind of got him. I just thought that is that actually got him in with Jaime, and they're actually getting a friendly rapport.
Well, yeah, it started out, though, it's like, you don't remember me, do you? Or we've met before, and he's like, huh, I forgot.
Right.
Starting out as the asshole, and it's like, oh, well, you know, at this battle we fought together, he's like, oh, that's where you got your scar? And he's like, aye. So,
and they also talked about this.
The flaming sword.
Right.
The flaming sword story, which was funny. So
that'll be become prominent later on in the series.
I figured they'd drop that for a reason.
Oh, yeah. And also, we also get kind of the reputation for the Greyjoys, that they're kind of ferocious.
Yeah, they, like, set a bunch of... Was it they who set a bunch of sailors on fire?
I don't know.
Was that this one?
Yeah.
I can't remember if this was this story.
Yeah, that's the story.
Okay.
Anyway, he's in good, and, like, and then after he buttered up Jaime, he's like, oh, well, then you'll give this message, and Jaime coldly says, I don't serve Stark. So, unless he's on the menu. Back up to the wall, we see Jon says, hey, look, I've talked to Sam, I like Sam, nobody's going to hurt Sam from this point forward.
Yeah, but there's an asshole that doesn't like that idea.
One of the less enlightened brethren.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to slice me off some bacon.
Uh-huh.
And then they promptly throw a fucking blanket party for the dude. Speaking of which, this is where the first time we've seen Ghost in how long?
Uh-huh.
Where the fuck's he been keeping this wolf?
It's only the fourth episode.
Okay. Yeah, but we've seen the wall a lot and not seen the wolf.
I believe in the books, Ghost gets to range pretty much wherever he wants to go.
Okay.
Because John, I think, lives in one of the more ruined-y, shitty parts of Castle Black, just for that very reason. So I ask you, because after the Sir Alistair sees that the boys are not going to hurt Sam and making kind of a mockery of the whole thing, he says, you know, do you think this is funny? When you're out there in the winter, do you want a man or sniveling boy on your side? I got to ask you, as a fighting man yourself, What's your take on that? Do you agree with what John's doing here?
I mean, I understand where he's coming from, but I totally agree with Alistair, which I think that's like mm-hmm. his name. I guess it's fine if Sam decides to stay in the rear with the gear, but you can't have a team member that you can't rely on.
Right.
I mean, because that's the weakest link.
Right.
So, and Sam's pretty fucking weak.
The one thing is, in the Night's Watch, they do have a lot of, like, clerical people. There's a Meister that has to send messages and stuff.
In the Marines, we have cooks and we have admin guys. And, you know, yeah, maybe not everybody should be in the infantry.
I thought that was, like, why would they try to make a guy like that? Why wouldn't they just put him right into the stable boys or cooks or, you know?
Again, in the Marine Corps, it's like we have a motto, too, that says every Marine's a rifleman. So that means at any point in time, anybody could be called up to the firing line.
Fair enough. It's probably the same at Castle Black, honestly.
Right. And you want everybody as tough as they can be.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as a military person, somebody, I mean, because Sam is super sniveling.
Yeah.
I mean, so he can't, like, reach down and grab some kind of reservoir he's never touched before, you know?
Right. At least try to defend yourself.
Right. It's bullshit, man. Like, reach down and grab some.
I don't think he's had a very supportive father.
Well, you know, I would be doing this as a trainer. I'd probably be doing the same thing Alistair was. Beat the fuck out of him until he learns how to do something. Yeah.
All right. Speaking of beatdowns, we're back at Vale Dothraki, where we see Viserys having a misunderstanding with his sister.
Apparently, yeah, he's losing it, man.
She invited him to dinner. He construed it as an order. She knitted him some exotic Dothraki gear.
Rags.
And he just sees it's rags. Yeah. And he's
they
about
do look
to,
like rags.
He's about to beat her ass, but she finds the cow's belt of golden whatever crap.
Yeah, smacks him in the goddamn face with it.
Yeah, and says, the next time you raise your hand, you're going to lose it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Next time you raise a hand against me, you won't have any hands.
Which I like.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Again,
she puts a foot up his ass.
Again, I don't think that he is...
Okay, maybe he's not getting it. I cede the point.
Right. Right. This is all going to climax here in a few episodes when he finally does. But anyway... we're back at the wall.
Or maybe he never does.
We're back at the wall. We get some more backstory behind John. We find out that John's a virgin. He's got no more experience with girls than
yeah, for being such a cute guy.
Right? He's a hunk.
But yeah, I guess I don't really give a shit. Obviously, celibacy sucks, though.
Right.
Because, you know, if they keep their vows, then they won't be getting none ever again. So I wonder if they have some kind of Spartan thing going on.
Well, you know, they're always whining about not having guys, dudes up there. Maybe they should start fucking women.
I was going to say, dude on dude action isn't going to give them any more dudes.
Maybe they should start making a bunch
of women. Like, they should import some. They should have house breeders.
Yeah, like 9 out of 10 boys up there should be called Snow, and they all serve on the wall. You know, they need to start punching those snows out like movie tickets. But that's the whole reason you find out that he is a virgin, because he just can't bring himself to visit a whore because he doesn't know if his mother was a whore.
He doesn't want another person named Snow.
Yeah, again. You need to go the opposite. We need more snows.
Hey, that's some clever exposition on why his name is Snow. Because in the north, bastards are called Snow.
Yep. So then Sir Alistair comes in, maybe drunk.
Really?
In the middle
I didn't
of all
get that.
This. Oh, really? He's bitter. He's like, sees that Sam's kind of cold. He's like, are you cold? Right by fire indoors. When's the last time you've been to a winter, boy?
Oh, yeah.
I walked the school uphill both ways in 10 feet of snow with Mance Raider on my back.
Yeah, he says, you don't know cold. Neither of you do.
Right. Apparently, the Night's Watch have resorted to
cannibalism. That's what I got out of it.
And horsibilism? I don't know what you...
That's not horse. It's not what
do you call it when you eat a horse? There's got to be a word for it.
Dinner. Equestrianism?
Right. You bake one cake, nobody calls you baker. You eat one son of a bitch, and all of a sudden you're a cannibal. Is that fair? I don't think so.
Yeah, obviously shit hit the fan. Yeah, he said, he dropped some kind of
Mance
name.
Mance Raider. who I talked about in the spoiler section a couple weeks ago, and I can talk about. But he is the king beyond the wall, the self-styled king behind the wall. He's the leader of all the wildings.
Ah. Is he a wilding?
He is a wilding himself, I would suppose, if he's going to be their king. Maybe he's like the king of the wild things. He's actually a little boy that wears
the wild things
suit.
Are?
Yeah.
Is it narrated by...
I don't know. This is... No, go ahead.
Christopher Walken?
I haven't seen that yet. Is it worth seeing?
Yeah, I think so. It's because the book's short, so the narration is short.
Gotcha.
Yep.
So back to the Dothraki. Daenerys is kind of freaking out because she hit her older brother. And Jorah pretty much sets her mind at ease. Is like, look, he's a bitch. He's a shadow.
Yeah, this is kind of like where he comes out. And, you know, Jorah's not backing Viserys at all.
And he's unbrainwashing Daenerys. Because she's like, but the people pray for the dragon. He's like, no.
People pray for food.
They pray for a six-pack and tickets to Chuck E. Cheese and a summer that doesn't end. But they both...
God, who the fuck prays for tickets to Chuck E. Cheese?
I, as a father of a five-year-old boy, I would do that.
Yeah, that is parental hell.
Not when you see the look of joy on the kids' faces, Michael. Anyway, back at King's Landing, we get to the long-awaited tournament. And first, we see Sansa try to give Joffrey the eye, and she got a stink eye in return.
Yeah, well, I think Sansa was trying to be sexy, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh, yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah,
then
she was getting him
Joffrey's
down.
Like a little bitch. Mm-hmm. Like, that's anything new. I hate Joffrey.
I do, too.
As soon as they fucking kill this kid, I'll be happy.
Who doesn't hate Joffrey?
You know what? He's going to be the one that lasts to the end. He's going to last to the end. I'm going to fucking be bitter the whole time.
I cannot confirm or deny this, because I have not gotten to the end. No one has. There's still two books left to be written.
He's a little motherfucker.
No, that's his dad.
That is his dad. He's a sister fucker.
So
we also find out why Baelish is called Littlefinger, or at least the reason he gives. I don't think that's the reason why he's called Littlefinger.
It is according to the book.
Baloney.
Because there's a bunch of a series of peninsulas on the shores of Westeros called the Fingers.
And because he's small?
Well, I think the book actually, he's the lord of the smallest of those peninsulas.
Okay, and that would make more sense.
They make fun of him by calling him, like, Lord Littlefinger.
I thought it was because of the size of his penis, which is why he owns a whorehouse, because otherwise he'd not get any.
I buy it.
And maybe Catelyn is the first one to call him that.
Saw
his little finger back when he was a ward of her father's.
Mm-hmm. We see a horrific jousting accident.
Yeah, you said there wasn't any blood this episode, but there was.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Quite
his
a bit of it.
Throat was cut open.
Mm-hmm. An accident.
It was a failure of his armor.
Possible connection to John Arryn's death, mysteriously dying in a
tournament
accident.
Looks like somebody's tying up loose ends.
At the hands of a Lannister bannerman, no doubt.
The Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Ser Gregory, something or other.
Is he Sandor or Gregor? He's Gregor Clegane. That's the mountain that rides. Sandor is his brother, the dog. And we hear that tale of brotherly love.
Yeah, that's fucked up. We find out why the Hound has a scarred face.
Yeah, he wanted to play with his brother's night toy.
When he was 6 and his brother was 8, the Mountain was 8, he saw him playing by... The Mountain saw the Hound playing with the Mountain's toy by the fire. So he grabbed him without saying a word and shoved his face in the fire and let him scream as his face melted.
Yeah.
That's some... Now, I've been pissed off with my brothers playing with my toys, but I've never wanted to melt their face.
This also explains the dog, the Hound. He has constant disdain for knights and their oaths, because his brother is a sworn knight.
Yeah.
And that's when it's like...
If that asshole can become a knight,
exactly,
who gives a shit,
exactly.
Right?
And they pretty much hate each other.
It doesn't look like there's any love lost between them.
Right. But that serves to really creep the hell out of Sansa.
Yeah, because not only is the story fucked up, but Baelish also says, man, not many people know this story. And she's like, well, I won't tell anyone. She's like, good, because if the Hound found out, not all the knights in King's Landing could save you.
I loved when, because he's leaning into Sansa this whole time, when he got like straightened up, he had this like really pleased, satisfied smile.
Yeah, he is an ass.
He is an ass. He is an ass. He's no one's friend.
And
Littlefinger's.
Arya. Well, at the sight of the... Do you think she was shocked or intrigued at the death of the knight?
I think probably a little bit of both.
Yeah.
Unlike Sansa, who thinks that knights are all flowers and sunshine and kitten kisses and
poop and
chivalry.
Rainbows.
Right. I mean, I think Arya is wants to be a fighter, so she's got her eyes a little bit
more
open.
I was wondering
about the reality of their
lives.
That's
what I was thinking. You know, like, does that set in the reality of picking up a sword?
Or a lance. Stay away from the lances, kid.
Anyway. Yeah, fuck that jousting shit for fun.
Right.
Should only do that shit when it's for real.
Right. So we then see a scene between Ned and Her Grace the Queen. And she was talking about, you know, they started off pleasant enough, but then they just started increasing their digs. She brought in...
Yeah, at first I was like, wait a second, is Cersei trying to mend fences here?
No.
Yeah, bullshit. Yeah, I knew that.
Nah, she's there to break the shit crust. And she goes, that's too bad your brother died because he was trained to lead and you're trained to follow. And he's like, I was also trained to kill my enemies, as was I.
And that's where they leave it. It's kind of like a declaration of war.
Which, by the way, actually happens in the very next scene, which I think is the most badass scene in the whole episode.
Yes, it is the most badass scene in the whole
episode.
We're
back at the crossing, about halfway between the King's Landing and Winterfell, and they're staying at the inn, and they're trying to keep a low profile.
Who's they? Did we...
So we have Catelyn here and the Master of Arms, right, who's not Jory. It's, I can't remember the guy's name.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, I'll look it up here in a bit. We see a couple characters who we don't know their importance yet, but we see Bronn, the sellsword, who's going to be figured prominently in the next few episodes. And Tyrion comes in. And
dwarves don't get no love nowhere, man.
No, no.
They turned out at the Starks at Winterfell, and they're turned out at the inn.
Right.
Oh, all the rooms are booked up. But Tyrion's smart. He secures himself a room from the sellsword.
Right. I thought it was really cool how she's trying to keep a low profile, notices Tyrion sees her, and then she stands up and says, you know, I'm a Tully. you guys are all my father's bannermen.
Yeah, I was like, what the hell is she doing? The whole time,
right?
I'm like, what is going on? And it's funny because Tyrion says the exact same thing.
Uh-huh.
It's like, wow, it's impressive that you have all this networking, but what are you at? What are you doing here?
Right.
But it's...
She was
Tyrion actually outs her
because
I think she was trying to keep a low profile.
Right.
I wonder, do you think it's a happenstance that they showed up at the same place at the same time?
Yeah, because that's the road that eventually leads west to Casterly Rock, which is, I imagine, where he was going
to
return.
He was very inquisitive about her present, where she was at.
You think he was trying to track her down?
Or, you know, just gain more information.
I don't know.
Backfired.
Yeah. So, I don't know. So, she decided to have him arrested after she called her bannersmen to her side, and just about the whole place got up and put swords to Tyrion.
Yep.
And that's the very subdued main theme plays us to the credits.
Yeah, and Tyrion's like, what? Which is, this is the scene I was talking about earlier at the very first scene when you asked me if I thought Tyrion was aware of their... suspicion, and I think this really took him by surprise. I don't think he was prepared for this.
Yeah, I have no.
Otherwise, if he knew, because he would want to avoid. He would never show up at Winterfell,
right?
If he knew that they were aware that the dagger was supposedly his.
I feel like Kate felt number one, she needed some leverage, and this is a good way to. And I also I think she also felt that if she let Tyrion escape out of there and she went on her way, that she wouldn't make it to Winterfell. Now that spies knew that she was on the road.
Really? Yeah, because I don't know. Because I was questioning this whole time because I'm like, fuck, this is bad news. This made me think, because they don't necessarily put things in chronological order, so it made me think that maybe that scene could have happened before Cersei ever showed up to talk to Stark.
Yeah, sure.
So maybe she already knew shit was going down.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Because they find out, I think, in the next episode.
But regardless, this means that's bad news for her husband down in King's Landing.
Yes, it is.
To fucking be arresting Tyrion like that.
Right. Because there's a hell of a lot more Starks to take hostage in more landings
Who the fuck is financing the entire guard?
Uh-huh.
The Lannisters.
Right, and the whole town, actually.
Yeah.
So
I don't think that was a smart move. That was a dumb
fucking move. In fact, I will go... This whole series is a fucking tragedy. Tragedy. It's a travesty and tragedy. It's a tragedy.
God damn, Walter. everything's a fucking travesty with you.
So he, I actually think this is one of the turning points where this one act is what's going to make the rest of what happens inevitable.
It's the keystone.
Yeah.
You pull it and all the bricks come tumbling down.
Yep. I think I might revisit this throughout the season, but if you know, it's like the classic, if Caitlin had just
let
Tyrion go on his way, none of this would have ever happened.
Mm.
Do you remember those old Woody Woodpeckers? Where it's like, if Woody had just called the police, none of this would have ever happened.
They say that? Yeah. I remember watching Woody Woodpeckers, but I don't ever remember any.
Yeah, I guess it was
this knowing's half the battle at the end of it.
Right. No, it was like, I guess, there must have been some 50s thing where that was a kid's deal, where like, if you see something happen, instead of getting involved or getting mixed up, you should just, you know, keep your head down and call the police.
And that was the beginning of the end for American culture.
That was. Woody Woodpecker. God damn it. God damn it, Woody.
What the fuck?
Pilated red fuck.
Bullshit. Bullshit from the 50s coming back to haunt us.
You got anything else before we hit to the outro?
I do not have anything else before we go to spoilers.
Mad Brew and I are part of the Bald Move Network. We cover, amongst other things, besides Game of Thrones, we do Walking Dead. By the time this podcast is out, we'll have done Justified, Breaking Bad, several other TV shows. If you'd like to keep up with everything that we're doing, please visit us at baldmove.com. If you'd like to send us email about Game of Thrones, you can contact us at nightswatch@baldmove.com. We also have a Facebook fan site, facebook.com/baldmove, and you can tweet at us at baldmove. The other thing you can do, because we're trying to get this podcast up and started for the new season that's coming out very soon, is leave us 5-star reviews on iTunes and subscribe, because what that does is it boosts us to the top of the results when people are searching for Game of Thrones podcasts. And, you know, the new and noteworthy section, which gives us a bigger audience and gets us more fan mail and grows the community. And if you'd like to directly support us and help pay for our bandwidth without actually getting any skin off your nose, you can use our Amazon affiliate link at amazon.baldmove.com.
Right. That doesn't add anything to your purchase. Nope. We just simply take a cut of Amazon's profits.
And look.
You're shopping there anyways.
You're listening to a Game of Thrones podcast. Don't tell me you don't
know. Go buy Battles of Westeros.
Yes, it's
through our Amazon.baldmove.com affiliate link. Because it's a kick-ass game.
Or the 5-set.
We should do a review on that game.
Yeah. I mean, I could almost be prepared to do it now. I just played a rousing version of the Whispering Woods campaign.
We actually played with the designer at Gen Con.
Yes, we did. Rob something or other. I can't think of his name.
We just lost cool points on that. If you didn't know his fucking name, you shouldn't have said it.
You should have
said Rob.
Rob.
Our buddy Rob.
I'm on a first name basis. That's why.
Yeah.
But anyway, I know you use Amazon. Just use amazon.baldmove.com, and we get a little cut from Amazon for everything that you do for referring them there.
Tell all your friends to use it.
Please. Post on Facebook. Whore that shit out. Yeah. Whore that like Roz. Here, I'm going to flip a coin at you.
Perfect tatas.
I'm going to flip a coin at you, listener. The next visit is on me. we've got some spoilers after the music, but if you don't want to, you want to bail on that, we'll see you next time. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Mad Brew.
We'll see you in the spoiler section. All right, we're back. I don't have a ton of spoilers this week.
I don't have any spoilers. We just got you to listen to Alert's theme song again for nothing.
Anyway, I want to talk about, you know, we learned a lot about the Greyjoys this episode. I can't remember if it's the second book or third book, but we see the Ward of Winterfell, Theon, right?
Theon.
He actually gets returned to his father with a proposal from Rob, and he actually backstabs the Starks.
Big fucking surprise, I guess.
Yeah, and
they are pirates.
Yes.
Though,
cursed your inevitable treachery.
Though it doesn't make it like, well, of course, Theon doesn't make it sound like that. You know, it's like, we were, I believe it's the episode after this, the next episode. He's like, we were protecting our people or some shit like that or whatever, the rebellion. There was a rebellion? Did they rebel?
Well, see, because, okay, you know, all the different kingdoms used to be individual kingdoms. And one of them was the Iron Islands, which was ruled over by these sea kings. And they tried to, during the Robert's Rebellion, they're like, well, we're just going to, you know, fuck off and start raiding the coast while this vacuum of power is in place. And
Reavers.
So they basically, the Lannisters and the Starks and the Baratheons, like, fuck that, and threw them back into the ocean and killed most of their boys and took the one back to Winterfell as a hostage to make sure that shit didn't happen again.
But it happens again.
Oh, yeah. Things have a way of doing that. So,
those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
But we already talked about the foreshadowing in that scene with Viserys and the courtesan about the dragon glass daggers.
And dragons in general.
The man with who can change his face the way a man can change his clothes. That's actually...
Is that in this season?
No, it's not. But it's cool as hell in the next season, and I haven't gotten further enough in the books to know how cool it is. But there's a lot of... That's something really? That's features in Arya's
feature. So it's
feature.
Like... It's not just disguising oneself. It's like they're like...
It's quasi-magical.
Okay, so they're like doppelgangers.
Kinda, yeah. It's pretty cool.
D&D doppelgangers. Or changelings.
Yeah, I was going to say changelings. I haven't heard of... Was that like the old...
Changeling?
The original D&D was the...
Changeling's like Eberron crap. It's newer.
The doppelganger.
Doppelganger's old, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's the old school. We talked about...
Doppelgangers exist in the new stuff, too. But.
Did I talk about Mance Rayder a couple podcasts ago? He's a former brother of the Night's Watch.
Yeah, that's why I asked you if he's a wilding.
Well, I mean, he is now. I mean, that's like saying there's like, I guess there's several
Night's
Watchmen.
Well, that's like saying I'm Caucasian and then I go join an African tribe and now I'm black.
No, but you'd be African. I don't think wilding is a racial designation.
Oh, I thought it
it's
was.
It's just like, you know, like Tyrion said, like, they happened to be on the wrong side of the wall when Bran the Builder built
they
it.
They weren't, he wasn't always a wilding.
No. No, I guess not. No, he used to be civilized. But anyway. So that's basically all the backstory and stuff. This is kind of a connecting episode.
I view wildings as like you had in
you think they're
in
like
Roman
Germanic
era. You had Visigoths and
right.
And you had all these other things, which were they were races
right.
Or ethnicities.
But I think they make a pretty compelling point that they're no different than any of the other people in Westeros.
Other than they were on the wrong side of the wall when it
went
up.
In fact, they might even, you know, because they have this whole mythos about the first men and children of the forest, and they actually might be closer to those people. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know enough about my mythology there. I'm primarily a Game of Thrones TV guy and a converted Game of Thrones
book guy. Yeah, I don't know shit about the mythology.
Song of Ice and Fire, sorry. So that's all I got.
That's all I have.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Later.